This is an iHeart podcast.
When I told people I was making a podcast about Benghazi, 9 times out of 10, they called me a masochist, rolled their eyes, or just asked, why?
Benghazi, the truth became a web of lies.
From Prologue Projects and Pushkin Industries, this is Fiasco, Benghazi.
What difference at this point does it make?
Listen to Fiasco, Benghazi on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Trump is upset, so upset he dropped an F-bomb on TV. We'll talk about the why, what's going on there. Buck Sexton joins us. It's always a good time. Supreme Court goings on with Bill Jacobson, the pro-life stuff, all that and more coming up on I'm Right. Let's talk foreign policy briefly. I'm just going to spend a couple minutes on this because I want to move on. I'm done with the Israel-Iran stuff for a little while until something else kicks off. But it's worth talking about because Donald Trump made a bunch of headlines today by doing something I don't know that I've ever seen an American president do. Trump was so upset that, don't worry, we're not going to show it to you. We'll beep it out. I know kids are watching, but he was so upset that he dropped an F-bomb on camera cussing at Israel and Iran. Here he was.
They violated it, but Israel violated it too.
Are you questioning if
Israel, as soon as we made the deal, they came out and they dropped a load of bombs, the likes of which I've never seen before. The biggest load that we've seen. I'm not happy with Israel. You know, when I say, okay, now you have 12 hours, you don't go out in the first hour and just drop everything you have on them. So I'm not happy with them. I'm not happy with Iran either. You know what? We basically have two countries that have been fighting so long and so hard that they don't know what the f*** they're doing. Do you understand that?
Now, Donald Trump is not exactly a saint. No one thinks that. No one would be surprised to find out he drops a bunch of F-bombs behind the scenes. How upset does he have to be? It's not like he's not in control of his mouth. He's been on camera his entire life. How upset does he have to be to drop that? And why? Let's talk about that for just a moment. Why is he so upset? Well, Donald Trump, I'm going to just heap some praise on him right now because he deserves it. Donald Trump desires peace. He's one of those guys. And not just Israel, Iran, all over. Donald Trump does not like war. He has spoken out against it a bunch. He thinks it's ridiculous. He thinks it's cost lives. He thinks it's just a crazy thing to do. For Donald Trump, the way he views the world is we should be making business deals because business deals bring people together who are fighting. You get a little rich and I get a little rich and we made a deal. And oftentimes, he has been successful in that. In his business life, he's been wildly successful in that. And as a politician during his first term, and in this term in different ways, he's been very successful in that. When he sees a war, when he sees a conflict, he steps in and says, hey, this is crazy. I'll mediate this whole thing. The American president has a big voice anyway. Let me mediate the whole thing. Hey, why are you guys fighting? Let's figure this out. Let's do a deal. We'll figure out it. You do a little this and I'll do a little that. We'll do it. That's how he does things. And it has been a wildly successful foreign policy. Let's give credit where it's due. His frustration. I have actually seen him voice very similar words to that recently. I'm not going to bother playing it for you right now. But he voiced that same kind of frustration with Vladimir Putin. He had this ceasefire agreement with Zelensky and Putin with Ukraine and Russia. But then there was an attempted assassination of Putin. And then Putin starts shooting rockets into cities. And Trump said something very similar. Didn't drop an F-bomb, but said something very similar. And I don't know what he's doing, throwing rockets into the city. Well, here's what has happened. Donald Trump is the furthest thing in the world from naive. So he knows what I'm about to say is true. But here's what has happened. Some people don't want to do a business deal. For some people, it's not about money. It's not about prosperity. It's not about their own country or their own citizens. Like the things that motivate Donald Trump don't necessarily motivate other people in every part of the world. For Vladimir Putin, Zelensky, he's been trying to broker a peace deal there since he got sworn in. There's no peace. People are still dying because they don't want peace. They want to fight. For a guy like Donald Trump, that's crazy. And you know what? I agree with him. It's crazy. It seems ridiculous. Doesn't understand it. Why don't you guys just come to an agreement? We have an agreement. What are you doing? But they want to fight. They want to kill each other. When it comes to Israel, Iran, it's an identical situation. Identical situation. The hatred between those two countries is long and deep. Those two countries have been at each other's throats for ages. Iran has been promising every Islamic fundamentalist on the planet that they will wipe Israel off the map for ages. Israel has been fighting against that kind of thing for ages. How many sons, daughters, how many family members have died in each country? How deep does the hatred go? You can look at this war, and especially from Iran's perspective, they've been kicked around. Israel took out all their leadership, almost all of it. We dropped a couple bunker buster bombs on them, blew up their nuclear facilities. For us, from the outside looking in, for a sane person, for someone like Donald Trump, well, all right, it's time to stop. All right, guys, let's stop. It's done. Maybe they don't want to stop. Maybe they like killing as many Israelis as possible, and maybe they're not stressing a new nuclear facility. For Israel, think about it from Israel's perspective. Israel's heard threat after threat, terrorist attack after terrorist attack. October 7th is still fresh in their mind. Donald Trump reportedly got very heated with Netanyahu on the phone. It wasn't just that thing, and you can picture him getting heated on the phone. What are you doing, shooting up? Maybe Israel doesn't want to stop. Trump wants to broker these ceasefires all over the world. He wants peace, and I think he deserves all the credit in the world for that, but it's hard to accept that there are parts of the world that don't want peace, and there won't be peace. So that's all I want to say about that. I want to move on. And I want to discuss a couple things before we wrap this up, because we have a huge show for you tonight. We have Buck Sexton coming up and Bill Jacobs, and there's all kinds of Supreme Court stuff. But I want to just discuss something. We're changing gears completely here because Obama said something. We're going to talk about what the communist wants and why he lies. You and I, we've had this conversation before that communists lie all the time. And when I say that, maybe you're just thinking I'm being partisan, but you can go read what they write. It's not just that they lie. They are commanded to lie. They will police each other's lies strictly. You want to get in trouble? You want to be a communist and get in trouble? You don't get in trouble for telling lies. You get in trouble for telling the truth. Now, why though? Why? They just love lying? It's not that. When you're selling a demonic, destructive religion, you can't be honest about it. You can't sell that to people. You have to carefully craft your words, craft your sentences, and oftentimes outright lie because the truth is horrific. That's why every communist regime in history has censored information. All of them, you know the stories out of the Soviet Union, the news channels, the newspapers, East Germany, China, all of them. Why are they so big on censorship? Because they need tight control of all sources of information so they can lie. And that is why, as I said this many times before, for all the evils of social media, and I know there are many, many evils of social media might be the thing that in the long run kills communism for good because it's a free-for-all. It should just be NBC, ABC, CBS, and CNN, and then we can hire all our own people, and we'll control everything, every anchor, every producer, every editor. It's all, we have control of everything, and then we can tell whatever lie we want. We'll tell people Hunter Biden's laptop was Russian disinformation, and they'll believe it. We can tell them whatever we want. And they had that complete control, but social media came out. And then, honestly, Elon Musk deserves a lot of credit. He buys Twitter now. They can't control all information. Therefore, the lies, the world of lies they're constantly building with their language is always coming crumbling down. That's why Barack Obama and many of them talk like this.
We want diversity of opinion. We don't want diversity of fact. By the way, it will require some government, I believe, regulatory constraints around some of these business models in a way that's consistent with the First Amendment, but that also says, look, there is a difference between these platforms letting all voices be heard versus a business model that elevates the most hateful voices or the most polarizing voices or the most dangerous in the sense of inciting violence voices. And I think is going to be a big challenge for all of us that we're going to have to undertake.
Wasn't that so revealing? Not just what he said, but how he said it. So careful. The slow halting. Got to make sure I choose the right word here. But we love the First Amendment. We love blah, 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 the First Amendment's great. We love that. But then everyone should be heard. But maybe we should. They know who they are. They know what they are. They know that you would be mortified beyond belief if the truth was ever revealed about who these people are and what they actually want. Therefore, they believe in lying about everything at all times, and they believe in censorship because they build a constant world of lies. And all it takes to destroy these people and their sick, demented worldview is the truth. Normal people speaking up and speaking out. And that's why they hate it. And so before I wrap this up, let me give you another truth, kind of another change of direction, but let me give you another truth. Communists will take power again in this country at some point in time. I know it doesn't seem like that now. Republicans are popular. Trump is popular, I should say. Democrats are unpopular. That they're on the outs. We got it. We're going to have it forever. But that's not how politics works. You know that. Eventually, they will come back. When they come back, they will do so much worse than they did even last time. Communists believe in accelerating things. They believe they lost power because they didn't go far enough. And so disgusting evil organizations like the FBI. You see, the FBI, well, they did horrible things under Joe Biden, and they will do worse things under the next communist. And we won't have any whistleblowers. Did you know that? We had brave whistleblowers like Steve Friend and Garrett O'Boyle under Joe Biden.
Mr. Friend, you ever been to a school board meeting?
Yes, I have.
FBI ever sent you to the parking lot of a school board meeting?
Yes, they have.
And in the parking lot of a school board meeting where the FBI sent you, you were taking down information regarding people's license plates.
That's correct.
But the FBI will crush you. This government will crush you and your family if you try to expose the truth about things that they are doing that are wrong. And we are all examples of that.
Both those gentlemen are still unemployed. The next time the communist takes power, the FBI will go after you and me with the fire of 1,000 suns. And next time we won't have any whistleblowers because our last whistleblowers have not been rewarded with promotions, with statues, with honors, with medals. They're still all unemployed. What are we doing at the FBI? All that may have made you uncomfortable, but I am right. Buck Sexton is going to join us in a moment to discuss that and other things. Let me discuss chalk with you before we get to Buck, because you need to get your T levels up. You need to get your energy up, your mood. Gentlemen, how's your mood? Do you have times where you just get down almost without explanation? I'm not talking about when your team loses. Do you have time and you just get down? It's because your T levels are low. It's not your fault. There are estrogens in the waters and the plastics, and our T levels are under attack. That's where chalk comes in. A male vitality stack from chalk. 20% increase in your T levels in 90 days. Go get some. We'll be back.
When I told people I was making a podcast about Benghazi, 9 times out of 10, they called me a masochist, rolled their eyes, or just asked, why?
Benghazi, the truth became a web of lies.
It's almost a dirty word, one that connotes conspiracy theory.
Will we ever get the truth about the Benghazi massacre?
Bad faith political warfare, and frankly, bullshit.
We kill the ambassador just to cover something up. You put 2 and 2 together.
Was it an overblown distraction or a sinister conspiracy?
Benghazi is a Rosetta Stone for everything that's been going on for the last 20 years.
I'm Leon Nafok from Prologue Projects and Pushkin Industries. This is Fiasco, Benghazi.
What difference at this point does it make?
Yeah, that's right. Lock her up.
Listen to Fiasco, Benghazi on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
We basically have two countries that have been fighting so long and so hard that they don't know what the f*** they're doing. Do you understand?
He's mad. Let's talk to Buck about it. Joining me now, somebody who doesn't really need any introduction, obviously, it's Buck Sexton. Everyone knows who Buck is now because he's such a big deal. Hey, Buck, Donald Trump's upset, and I kind of made the point in the open that He got this upset with Putin and Zelensky, too. For Trump, everything should be a business deal. Why don't we just do a deal? Why are we fighting? And I think he gets frustrated with these places. They don't want a business deal. They want to fight. Does that make sense?
Oh, when you're talking about the Middle East, that's definitely the case. I think that and there's other places around the world where that's true, too. I mean, I remember from some of my time over there, Jesse, in the old GWAT days, where I would talk to Ford deployed Marines like yourself or even people who were on the PRT, the Provisional Reconstruction Team, which is like the State Department guys there. And long story short, they're like, hey, you know, if you guys stop shooting each other, meaning in Iraq specifically in this case, if you guys stop shooting each other and like putting IEDs out there and acting like maniacs, you'll have clean drinking water and electricity and we'll build your schools. So like, we all get it. We should all stop shooting each other. Like, nah, we're going to keep shooting each other. That's just the reality, unfortunately. And I mean, that was the cold, hard truth that we saw over there in the Middle East. Like, it's like, you guys are the same religion, but a different denomination, like Sunni Shia. You really hate each other that much? Oh, yeah. Oh, they do. So, it's something that I appreciate Trump's frustration on it at some level. Obviously, in this case, it's, Israel, it's, Judaism and Islam in the case of Iran. But I appreciate also that he's showing everybody, look, he expects a certain approach to things when he's involved. And even if you're on our team as an ally, like, he's still going to call you out if he thinks that you're causing a problem. So even Trump, I think, sees that it's going to be a little bit of a tough sled to get these two to stop shooting missiles at each other.
Buck, let's switch gears a little bit here. I'm worried. I have this worry because of how down the Democrat Party is. It's not just that they're down, they're going down. Their popularity's even worse. They can't stop campaigning, loudly campaigning on every issue that Americans hate. They appear to be a suicidal party that'll be completely defunct about 5 minutes from now. But obviously you and I both know we've been at this long enough. That's not how it works. At some point, they'll rebound. They'll come back. Mm-hmm. What's that look like? How?
Well, I think I don't want you to have to take out your womp womp noise over there in the studio, but we just saw not only the worst major party presidential candidate. I think Kamala was substantially worse than John Kerry. Substantially worse. I mean, I think she's truly the worst candidate that we've seen in our lifetime. That made it through a primary, or not even she didn't make it through a primary. That ended up as the candidate. And it came after the mass fraud of Biden's whole reelection, he doesn't have dementia thing. And you change a couple of 100,000 votes over, 4 or 5 states, and she's the president. Everyone needs to remember this. Like, yes, Trump won a resounding electoral college victory, and it's amazing, and the good guys won, the cavalry came over, the Comanches had to flee, like, yay, it's all great. They almost, by the numbers, pulled off Kamala as president after having to pull Dementia Joe. So that is my way of answering your question as to, will they come back? They absolutely will. I think they misplayed their hand on the issue of immigration specifically. I always knew that was going to be where they try to dig in, but they needed to wait until we got beyond the tattooed MS-13, human trafficking dirtbags, and started picking up, you know, people that are just here illegally, and maybe some grandmas, you know, some abuelas, et cetera, and start sending them. They didn't wait. They went right for, how dare you kick this non-American gang member and like narco trafficker out of the country. It's like, you guys are psychos. So they, and the other thing is, I thought they would start to move away from the gender identity theory stuff, you know, the trans stuff, right? And they haven't. They're actually doubling down on that, which is remarkable to me. So I think that the area where they're going to probably get their footing again, Jesse, is going to be something that's a combination of healthcare. And if the deportations ramp up, they're just going to make people try to make people cry about it a lot. But I also think most Americans feel like they got really scammed, particularly under Biden with the border. And so maybe that won't work. But, you know, healthcare is just an excuse for communism that, you know, pulls on people's heartstrings. You know what I mean? Like universal healthcare, the Bernie stuff. Mm-hmm. So that's probably where I see them rallying. Or if we get an ugly correction in the markets, they'll freak out and say it's Trump's fault. Those are the plays that I can see.
Buck, why not let go of the tranny stuff? Because the immigration stuff, look, you can argue they're doing it wrong, and of course they are, but it does make sense. Mass importation of foreign barbarians with no value system whatsoever is perfect for the Democrat Party. Those are going to be Democrat voters forever. But the tranny stuff is not popular. It's the most minuscule portion of the population, so you're not going to get extra voters from it. And it's not like those people have any money. They're a bunch of freaks. Now, if we're just talking about, you know, gay stuff, there's all kinds of billionaire gay people out there. But the trannies don't have any political weight whatsoever. So looking at this purely political, why not just let them go?
So I've actually truly thought about this a lot. And I wrote about this. There's a chapter on this in my book that's coming out, Jesse, which will have to come onto your show at the end of this year to sell.
I didn't even do that on purpose.
Thank you. Shameless plug. But no, really, the issue of the trans ideology stuff, I see it in two ways. One is if they win on this, they win on everything. And that is to say, if they can actually get their way on something that is truly a binary right and wrong, which is, you know, men are men, women are women, they're not the same thing, and which society should treat them differently. If they can get people to say, yeah, that 220-pound guy with like a big beard, but now wears a dress and has long hair and puts some eyeshadow on, like that's a chick and he should compete. If they can get society to go along with that, they can get society to go along with absolutely anything, right? It's like Jesse, from maybe your book on Anti-Communist Manifesto, that the communists, even if they knew that you didn't believe as a person living in a communist country like Soviet Union, the things that you said, mouthing the preferred slogans was demeaning, right? So even if they knew that you knew that the grain harvest was actually horrible and there's mass starvation, it's shut up, say the grain harvest is great. Because then they own you because you're just part of this, you're part of the propaganda machinery, even if you know it's untrue and you're just bowing to force. So that's point one on it. And then the quick point two on it is that there's a force multiplier effect of the trans agenda, which is it's not about the trans individuals. It's about the medical establishment, which, as we realize, I think this was what really shocked parents too. Like the American Academy of Pediatrics is like, yeah, like if you want to, you know, castrate your 12-year-old or whatever and turn him into a girl, go for it. I mean, chemically castrate. You know, you look at these things, you say, hold on a second. Once you've gotten a parent to abuse his or her child on behalf of an ideology, I think it is impossible for 99% of them to ever come back into the light of truth and to recognize what they've done, because they're going to want to say, well, I did the right thing. I did with the American Academy of Pediatrics. So it's really about everyone around the trans individual or the trans ideology that gets sucked into it. And that tries to suck other people into it too. And then, like I said, they own you, right? I mean, especially if you've done something irreversible to your kids on behalf of this, you're never going to. I know it's pretty dark, right? But I think that is what is going on. And that's why they won't back off of it, because it's just a way of having absolute power over people.
I like that. That's smart. I'm going to steal that and use that. I'm going to say that on my own show, not give you any credit for it. He is Buck Sexton. Thank you, my brother, as always. I appreciate it. All right. We have to talk some Supreme Court stuff, but I want to talk to you first about the clock being ticking. I mean, don't worry, everybody's fine, but Independence Day is almost here. We're like, what, 2 weeks? We're less than 2 weeks from Independence Day. Pure Talk is giving out American flags, allegiance flags. Those are American flags that are made in America. They're giving them out to veterans, 1,000 of them, before Independence Day. And you can nominate somebody. Pure Talk wants you to nominate somebody. If you are the veteran, nominate yourself. These things come in the triangular box. It's a really cool thing to do for the veteran in your life. PureTalk.com/nominate. Go nominate somebody. And while you're at it, switch to the cell phone company that does stuff like this, not Pride Month stuff. You don't need Verizon, AT&T, T-Mobile. Pure Talk, you'll save money. They're on the same network, so you're not sacrificing service. Switch to Pure Talk. I adore them. PureTalk.com/JesseTV. We'll be back.
When I told people I was making a podcast about Benghazi, 9 times out of 10, they called me a masochist, rolled their eyes, or just asked, why?
Benghazi, the truth became a web of lies.
It's almost a dirty word, one that connotes conspiracy theory.
Will we ever get the truth about the Benghazi massacre?
Bad faith political warfare, and frankly, bullshit.
We kill the ambassador just to cover something up. You put 2 and 2 together.
Was it an overblown distraction or a sinister conspiracy?
Benghazi is a Rosetta Stone for everything that's been going on for the last 20 years.
I'm Leon Nafok from Prologue Projects and Pushkin Industries. This is Fiasco, Benghazi.
What difference at this point does it make?
Yeah, that's right. Lock her up.
Listen to Fiasco, Benghazi on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, let's welcome in the professor, because there's a lot going on with the Supreme Court and lawfare and insanity in the country. And obviously, there's nobody better at breaking this nuttiness down than Bill Jacobson, professor, Cornell University law professor, I should point out, and founder of Legal Insurrection, which I've loved for years. It makes me sound smarter on the radio. Okay, Bill, the Supreme Court, they did us right on immigration, right? What happened?
Well, I mean, the Supreme Court paused a lower court order which prevented the government from removing people who've already gone through the judicial process. They've had their hearings. They've had their due process. They've been ordered removed from the country. Some countries won't take them because they're such bad people, the crimes they've been convicted of. But government did find South Sudan would take them through diplomatic means and was about to send, I think it's 8 people or 6 people to South Sudan, until a Massachusetts district court judge says you can't do that because you need to give them another hearing. And the other hearing is notice and hearing as to whether they have a reasonable fear of being tortured if they're sent to South Sudan or some other country under the Convention Against Torture. So what we're this would be like the second or third round of due process that they would get. And the Supreme Court put a stay on that. The Supreme Court said, no, we're putting your order on hold. Unfortunately, that's not the end of it, because this district court judge just yesterday, after seeing what the Supreme Court had done, said, well, wait a second, this doesn't really apply to me, what's in my court, because I also, in an order that wasn't before the Supreme Court, added additional remedies, and that remedy order wasn't before the Supreme Court. So really, a district court judge, some people have described it as defying the Supreme Court. I think that's close to true. Certainly trying to get around the Supreme Court ruling with what I consider to be a hyper-technical and not accurate recitation of what the Supreme Court did. So that's where we are. Supreme Court did good. Government's back before the Supreme Court. As of 2 minutes ago, court had not yet ruled, saying, wait a second, this judge is totally out of line. Please enforce your order.
Okay. Well, I guess we'll take that. How did this idiot judge even get there?
How did he get on the court? Well, he was one of the last Biden appointees. Uh-huh. I think he was in December, if I'm recalling correctly, and 4 Republican senators never bothered to show up to vote against him. So he got by on a 47-45 vote. as did many of the late-term Biden judges who've created so many problems. Republicans didn't show up. And so people should not be angry about the situation. I mean, of course, Biden's going to want to get judges he likes on the court. But when we don't even show up, when our side doesn't even show up to vote no, and there are numerous judges who got in late in Biden's term because judges didn't show up. And for this particular judge, Vance didn't show up. And I think it was Rubio didn't show up, and two other Republicans didn't show up to vote against him.
Interesting how that ended up working out for the same administration. Okay, let's shift gears here. Why is this Garcia guy free now?
Well, he's not free yet. There's an issue about he was granted bail, essentially. He was he's got criminal charges against him. And just like any criminal defendant, they go before a magistrate judge, and magistrate judge decides whether you get bail. And the judge said he's entitled to bail, which is kind of crazy in itself. Doesn't mean he's going to go free yet, because ICE still has a detainer on him. But, and this will go to the full district court judge and eventually to appeals, whether as a in his criminal matter, he gets bail. And so that's what it is. He's not been released yet. He's got very serious criminal charges against him. It's somewhat outrageous that a judge would find that this person is not a threat to society, that this person is not a flight risk, et cetera. At the end of the day, though, he's not going anywhere because ICE has a hold on him, because he's been ordered deported.
What about Muhammad? What about Muhammad Khalil?
Yeah, that's the Columbia University agitator, anti-American, obviously anti-Israel agitator. The guy who helped run the group that wreaked havoc on Columbia's campus, that intimidated people, that in many ways got Columbia into a lot of the trouble they're in with the Trump administration, and even the Biden administration to some extent, lesser extent. And so he was being held by ICE pending deportation. And a judge ruled that he's not a flight risk because they're going to confiscate his passport, and he's not a danger to the community, and that pending his deportation proceedings, he's allowed to be free. So what did he do? He immediately went back and started with the anti-American rhetoric, the anti-Israel rhetoric, leading rallies, leading protests. I mean, this is the worst of society. I mean, you've got to look at our situation and really marvel at what the Biden administration, and the Biden administration is really the Obama holdovers, it's really Team Obama, how much damage they caused to our society, because they understood that if you let in at least several million people, and then you impose barriers to deporting them, everybody gets a hearing, gets a second hearing, gets a third hearing potentially, that you can't deport people. You can't get them out of the country in any expeditious fashion. And so let them all in without any checks and make it very difficult to get them out of here. And that's really what we're seeing is the havoc wreaked by the Biden administration and the Team Obama people who were running the administration, swamping our country with either illegal people, people who are here illegally, with criminals, and with anti-American agitators who have no business being here in the first place.
Bill, let me ask you this question in the lamest way possible, but by now you understand how uneducated I am, so I'm just going to ask it in this way. They put up all these barriers so we can't deport people, and then we get a ruling here and a ruling there and a ruling from the Supreme Court. Is there going to be a moment at any point where the last of the barriers have been battered down and we can deport all these people? Or is it going to be 4 years of battering this one down and then there's another one? Are we up for 4 years of this, or at some point are we going to cross the last hurdle? Does that make sense?
Yeah, well, with Congress unable to do just about anything, because any significant change to the immigration laws would never get through the Senate because of the filibuster. So unless there's some change in the law, people are going to be entitled to these hearings. Now, a lot of people are so-called self-deporting, and that probably is the ultimate answer. If you cut off their ability to get jobs here, if you cut off their benefits, if you cut off the welfare state that supports people who are here illegally, they're going to leave. And a lot of people have left the country, so-called self-deported, and made it easier for them to self-deport. And if you self-deport, you're not permanently barred from re-entering the country. So I think it's a combination of pushing forward on all fronts, creating barriers to people sustaining themselves economically here if they're here illegally. But yeah, this is a major problem and nobody should kid themselves about it. I think that it would be an enormous benefit if we get a ruling from, you know, through Congress or through the courts that you don't count these people in the census. Because one of the reasons the Democrats like this is the illegal alien population tends to congregate in blue states and they are counted for the census. I've seen estimates, I don't know how accurate they are, that Democrats have picked up at least several congressional seats and several electoral college votes by reason of counting illegal aliens in the census. And so it's not a great situation. I mean, immigration is the number one issue. And I think Trump was right to focus on it heavily. And I think he's got to just keep pushing forward. But there are these barriers. The Supreme Court hopefully will review some of these things and open them up. But when we have district court judges who, like the one right now that's back in the Supreme Court, look at a Supreme Court ruling and say, well, yes, you put a stay on my preliminary injunction, but you didn't put a stay on the thing I did after the preliminary injunction. Therefore, it doesn't matter. The Supreme Court needs to get tough with these judges. And we've been talking about this. I've talked about it many times on your show, that until John Roberts and the rest of the Supreme Court starts adequately addressing the district courts who have become extremely activist, extremely litigious, as judges, they seem to be advocates for a position. Not all of them, but many of them. Until the Supreme Court gets tougher with that, this is going to continue.
Bill, as always, thank you. Appreciate it. All right. We still have a lot more show left. Hang on.
When I told people I was making a podcast about Benghazi, 9 times out of 10, they called me a masochist, rolled their eyes, or just asked, why?
Benghazi, the truth became a web of lies.
It's almost a dirty word, one that connotes conspiracy theory.
Will we ever get the truth about the Benghazi massacre?
Bad faith political warfare, and frankly, bullshit.
We kill the ambassador just to cover something up. You put two and two together.
Was it an overblown distraction or a sinister conspiracy?
Benghazi is a Rosetta Stone for everything that's been going on for the last 20 years.
I'm Leon Nafok from Prologue Projects and Pushkin Industries. This is Fiasco, Benghazi.
What difference at this point does it make?
Yeah, that's right. Lock her up.
Listen to Fiasco, Benghazi on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Well, it's an anniversary, and a good anniversary. It's been 3 years since the Dobbs decision, but we all know what that was. That was the overturning of Roe versus Wade. Now, that's great. Where are we now, though? Because ultimately, the goal is to save the babies. That's the ultimate goal. We're doing that? Are things getting better, worse? We figured 3 years later, it'd be good to check in with our favorite, Dr. Abby Johnson, former Planned Parenthood director, and she's actually a best-selling author as well. Abby, okay, 3 years later, how are the babies?
Well, the abortion rates are actually up. So, you know, I think everybody thought this is going to be the saving grace that we all needed, that we're going to overturn Roe and suddenly abortions are going to go away. That's not at all what happened. So abortions are up across the country. Late term abortions, so abortions in the third trimester, are actually at historically high levels. Abortion pills, so medication abortion, chemical abortion, whatever you want to call it, that is available now in all 50 states. We now have, and you just get that online, by the way. You just type in whatever information you want. You don't have to talk to a doctor. You don't have to talk to a medical professional. You don't even have to be pregnant. You don't even have to be a woman to get these pills for them to show up at your house. And you know, now, I mean, what, now what? I mean, we've got now a handful of states that have ratified their constitutions to allow abortion all the way up to 9 months of pregnancy. So, I mean, how are we since Roe's been overturned? I mean, I think things are considerably worse, if I'm being honest. I mean, is there hope moving forward? Absolutely. We always have hope. But was it this, you know, silver bullet that we thought it was going to be to end abortion? No, it hasn't been.
Okay, let me just ask a general question to follow up from that then. Why? Why hasn't it gotten better? Is it just simply the ease of the pill, which you just pointed out? Anyone can get it any place. Is that it? Is it the pill?
Yeah, I think the pill has been a significant contributing factor to the abortion increase across the country. And I also think... I think too, and I was just actually talking to someone about this. Abortion is hard. Fighting against abortion is hard. And so, you know, I think people, and particularly people who are sort of, you know, moderately pro-life, or maybe, you know, the people that aren't necessarily out here fighting this, there was something introduced to them that was kind of new and shiny, and that was the transgender movement, right? And so transgenderism in the media, and you know, that's kind of taken over, and that is an easy fight to have. So it's very easy to say, you know, well, boys shouldn't be changing in girls' locker rooms, or you know, we've got lots of stories of that. And so I think that was kind of the next new shiny thing that conservatives could focus on. So when Roe was overturned, I think a lot of conservatives, particularly sort of people that weren't kind of in the pro-life movement, said, okay, well, great. We don't have to focus on abortion anymore. And then here came this big, nasty transgenderism beast. And so all these conservatives said, okay, well, here's a new thing to fight against. And it was so easily unifying, because even people who are gay and lesbian, a lot of them don't even like what's going on with transgenderism. So it was something that was so unifying to the base, and it's easy to fight against. Whereas abortion is super hard to fight against because it's way more divisive than this transgenderism issue. And so I think people have just sort of given up. I think that a lot of people think that this argument is settled, but from you know, my kind of field of vision, there's no way it's settled. As long as these innocent children are dying, as long as innocent children are being pulled apart in their mother's wombs, as long as women are still dying from these abortion procedures, it's not finished.
Why is abortion so ingrained in our culture? Does it just come down to a length of time thing, Abby? Is it just that simple? It's been going on here for so long, 50 plus years, longer than that, obviously, that now it's almost like it's cemented into this culture in a lot of ways. Did I say that right?
Yeah, I mean, we can look back, you know, in the Old Testament, right? And we see people sacrificing their children for different things, right? For success, wealth, to appease, you know, false gods. And they didn't call it abortion back then, but it was child sacrifice. We're essentially doing the same thing. Why are women aborting their children? For wealth, careers, to fulfill their own selfish desires. I mean, that's primarily what abortion is used for today. And it's the same thing. It's child sacrifice. It's just called something more palatable, because nobody's going to say, oh, I'm going to go sacrifice my child at Planned Parenthood today, right? So we've called it something more palatable, but it's the same demon that people were fighting in the Old Testament, just a new name. And I think that we have for so long, really since the introduction of the birth control pill in the 60s, we have been promoting this environment that it's easy and it should be, we should be allowed to have sex without consequences. And that's just not realistic. And so if you promote that and you're telling women and men that you should be, that you have the right to have sex without consequences, well, when that consequence is a baby, then naturally they're going to say, well, then I should have the right to take the life of that baby so that I can live the life that I want to.
Abby, what about Planned Parenthood? Have they been defunded? Is that coming? Are we getting somewhere with that? It seemed like that was gaining traction, but I'm so used to the GOP lying to me about that at this point. I'm just the ultimate cynic. Where are we at in this whole thing?
So we had hoped that this bill would have already been through and have gotten a vote. It has not yet. So, you know, the House passed it. Now the Senate is sort of, it's just still hanging out in the Senate. You know, yeah, I mean, this bill would defund Planned Parenthood. I think it also has some concerning things in it, though. It's got a lot of language about AI, about some tech that should be concerning to us. So I don't know. I mean, is that the answer that we're looking for, this particular bill? I'm not sure. Do I want Planned Parenthood defunded? Absolutely. But I think we have to do it the right way. And if we defund Planned Parenthood, does that mean abortion goes away? No, it doesn't. So I think we have to be realistic. I think we were not realistic when we defunded, when we overturned Roe. And I think we have to be very realistic when we're talking about defunding Planned Parenthood. I think a lot of people in the movement, a lot of conservatives are kind of hanging their hat. They hung their hat on overturning Roe, and that didn't work out like we thought it was going to. So now they're hanging their hat on defunding Planned Parenthood. But I can tell you right now, that is not going to shut them down. They have many, many private donors. We've talked about this before, Jesse. Warren Buffett is the largest donor to Planned Parenthood. And, you know, he's donating over $130 million a year to help low-income women murder their babies. So it's not like all of a sudden they're going to be defunded and all their clinics are going to close. That's a foolish notion for anyone to have. You know, the killing is going to continue. The murder is going to continue, whether or not we're federally funding them or not. Although I do think there are federal dollars shouldn't be going to that facility for a multitude of reasons, not just because they murder babies, but because they've been caught in multiple Medicaid fraud cases, because they don't know how to use the funds properly. I mean, there's so many reasons that we should defund them. The fact that they murder babies is the primary one, but it's not the only one.
Abby, keep it up as always. Appreciate you very much. All right. Lighten the mood. Next.
When I told people I was making a podcast about Benghazi, 9 times out of 10, they called me a masochist, rolled their eyes, or just asked, why?
Benghazi, the truth became a web of lies.
It's almost a dirty word, one that connotes conspiracy theory.
Will we ever get the truth about the Benghazi massacre?
Bad faith political warfare, and frankly, bullshit.
We kill the ambassador just to cover something up. You put two and two together.
Was it an overblown distraction or a sinister conspiracy?
Benghazi is a Rosetta Stone for everything that's been going on for the last 20 years.
I'm Leon Nafok from Prologue Projects and Pushkin Industries. This is Fiasco, Benghazi.
What difference at this point does it make?
Yeah, that's right. Lock her up.
Listen to Fiasco, Benghazi on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right. It is time to lighten the mood. And look, what's better than watching Donald Trump beat up on the American press? This kind of stuff just makes my day.
I think it's been completely demolished. I think the reason we're here is because those pilots, those B-2 pilots, did an unbelievable job. And, you know, the fake news, like CNN in particular, they're trying to, you know, they're trying to say, well, I agree that it was destroyed, but maybe not that destroyed. You know what they're doing? They're really hurting great pilots that put their lives in the line. CNN is scum, and so is MSDNC. They're all. And frankly, the networks aren't much better. I think CNN ought to apologize to the pilots of the B-2s. I think that MSDNC ought to apologize. I think these guys really, these networks and these cable networks are real losers. You really are. You're real losers. You're gutless losers. I say that to CNN because I watch it. I have no choice. I got to watch that garbage. It's all garbage. It's all fake news. But I think CNN is a gutless group of people. And the people that run it, nobody even knows it's been sold so many times. But the people that run it ought to be ashamed. MSDNC, a guy named Brian Roberts, he heads it. He's a disgrace. He's a weak, pathetic disgrace.
All right. I'll see you tomorrow.
When I told people I was making a podcast about Benghazi, 9 times out of 10, they called me a masochist, rolled their eyes, or just asked, why?
Benghazi, the truth became a web of lies.
From Prologue Projects and Pushkin Industries, this is Fiasco, Benghazi.
What difference at this point does it make?
Listen to Fiasco, Benghazi on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is an iHeart podcast.